Lucis Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Our theme for today is Karma, Part 2. And I like this thought. There's a thought that comes from Christmas Humphreys, his book, Karma and Rebirth. But I think this thought will give you some insight as to karma and what it's about. Karma is the expression of the law of equilibrium, and nature is always working to restore that equilibrium whenever, through man's acts, it is disturbed. Karma creates nothing, nor does it design. It is man who plans and creates causes, and karmic law adjusts the effects. Karma neither rewards nor punishes. It only restores lost harmony. We were speaking last time about group karma, and I think, Sarah, Dale, it's really important to do a recap on karma. And we left off at that point where we were discussing group karma, and I felt you had more to say. Could you comment further on that?
Well, it's based on the fact that spiritually our lives are not lived in a vacuum. We are part of something much greater. We're part of a whole that is beyond our comprehension, but I think many of us increasingly sense that we belong to a greater life. And that means that we are swept up in karmic patterns that are much greater than our own personal responsibility, but they kind of carry us along. To put it on a scale that might be easy for people to envision, we can think of our group, our family. Families have karma that bring back members of the family repeatedly, lifetime after lifetime, into relationship with each other, for the purpose, as the opening quote said, of the rediscovering or restoring of equilibrium and balance. How wonderful it would be if we thought of our group relationships in terms of the search for a perfect equilibrium or balance. It might give us a new insight into why we have connections with various people.
Right, and you can continue that theme of group karma also on the nation, the level of the nation, because every nation is made up of people, and people have karma, and then so the nation itself incurs certain karma, and based on the judgment made by the leaders of this nation and the people who elect this leader, if they do. And so I'm thinking of one incident in the past history of the United States, and which is not a pleasant bit of karma to talk about, but and that has to do with slavery. At one time in the early history of the United States, slavery was an accepted practice, and that was a terrible sin of separateness, really, because we held one group of people separate from another, and they were looked upon as inferior, and they were treated very badly. And this went on for a couple of hundred years, and now here in the 20th century, we begin to
21st.
21st. Sorry, maybe, well, some of them in the 20th century, but yes, in the 21st century, they begin to adjust this imbalance, and through the civil rights movement and we went through a very painful process there, which is what happens with working out of karma. But it's a painful process of bringing back into balance a very unjust period.
And we can look at it in other nations in the world. For example, what's happening in the former Yugoslavia is undoubtedly extremely karmic in its implications. And I think the people sense it, but perhaps not with a very complete comprehension. But they know that historically wrongs go back 400 or 500 years or more, that they still remember and want redress for. But so far, it seems they're swept up in an endless cycle of payback. And the same seems to be true in the Middle East. And we talked last time about the fact that payback never really puts an end to karma. If you're looking for the restoration of harmony and equilibrium, you don't achieve that by returning wrong action with more wrong action.
Yeah, that was all based on the law of the eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth kind of law, which...
It's a very crude misunderstanding of karma, I think.
Right. It might work for a while, but it does have its penalties, right?
But all throughout the world, you can see this group karma unfolding in international relationships. And it's something that I think could be taught on on the level of public opinion with very beneficial results. If people could begin to understand that they have a part in whatever situation they and their group are involved in, that there are ancient responsibilities that need to be brought to light, and that everyone has a part to play in the correcting of the situation and the putting right of it, and not just pointing the finger at the other party and saying, you have to change, then I think something creative is brought in and a kind of a unity can emerge that might reveal a new approach that currently isn't recognized. Usually the correction of these wrongs comes through a new, previously untried path, rather than going down the same old road again and again in a cycle of endless retribution.
Mm-hmm. But back to group karma, I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. I could go through several lifetimes leading the life of a saint or a Mother Teresa, only to, in some lifetime where perhaps I'm entitled to a good karma or have earned a good karma, I get swept up in the nation's or the group's bad karma. Is that correct? Did I catch that right?
Yes, I would say so, that there are layers and layers of karmic implication to this. There's your personal karma, which as a saint would be very good, and then there's the karma of the group to which you belong, which might be more mixed. Wouldn't you think there'd be... nuances.
Sure. Yeah. As you mentioned earlier, your family group, which you incarnate in, and that's a choice of the soul, and the national group and the ethnic group. All of these different groups have certain limitations. They have certain, karmic obligations that have to be brought into balance. And so whatever you're born into, yes, you're a part of it.
And speaking of rebirth, since we're on that topic, what is the relationship between karma and rebirth?
I think they go together. I don't think you can understand the one without the other concept. They're both Eastern concepts. Rebirth is something that's not recognized in Orthodox Christianity, or I believe in Judaism or in Islam, but the esoteric traditions and the Eastern religions of Buddhism and Hinduism do teach the law of rebirth, which is that the soul comes back into physical form repeatedly, again and again and again, for the purposes of its own evolution and for service. And karma is the cumulative effects of the actions of repeated lifetimes. Because, as we said, karma means literally action and consequence. It's the law of cause and effect.
So it's not, once again, it's, I think we've addressed this before, but just to make certain that I understand it correctly, it's not necessarily punishment then.
No.
You know, it's not punishment, I did this in a prior lifetime, or I did a negative. I hurt a neighbor in an early stage of my development, and I'm going to be punished by karma later. That's not the way it is then.
Well, no, I don't personally believe that. There's something in me that really rebels against that idea or that definition, because if we believe in a divine power that is at the hub of all things and overseeing all evolution, I cannot believe that that divine creative source would wish any punishment upon anyone or anything. It simply wouldn't tie in with the goodness of God and of the world. And I do believe the world is a good place and that all things happen for the best. And so karma is not punishment, it's correction. We're all in the process of correcting something.
Yes, and I think in related to rebirth, then if we incur and harm, create some kind of harm to a person in one lifetime, and I think that correction can extend over to another lifetime with that same soul in another existence, and it can be carried on like that. And if we don't make these corrections and create these balances that are deemed right by nature, then we keep repeating these same problems, these same incorrect actions over and over again. And it could happen lifetime after lifetime, I believe, also. We carry into the next life those problems that have not been addressed in this life. And if that involves another person or another group of people, then we are karmically linked with them, and we have to come back and make that adjustment.
There's a saying, maybe some of our listeners have heard it, that character is destiny. And to me, that links reincarnation, rebirth, with karma. Character is destiny. Our essential, fundamental composition as a human being determines what unfolds in our lifetime, and that puts the creative power right back on the individual, maybe not on the personality, which would choose only happiness and personal fulfillment, but on the soul, which knows in a very fine degree exactly what needs to be restored, what needs to be redressed, put right. I think to the soul, that's pure joy. So rather than thinking of punishment, you might think that the situation you're in now is your soul's attempt to redress and rebalance something that had gone out of balance. To me, that definition is much more stimulating and inspiring, and there's a kind of an acceptance that wells up within one that isn't passive. It isn't a passivity, because we have to take control of our lives and be the determiners of our destiny, but there's an acceptance of how to work with the circumstances we find ourselves in and to see something positive and constructive in them.
Yeah, and souls make the choice. Souls have the choice of which family to incarnate into. And quite often there is a karmic tie there, and they come in for very specific purposes, maybe to work out some imbalance that was created, or to it may not have to do with that particular soul, but it has to do with the parents of that soul, and because there is some karmic imbalance there having to do with the parents. And so that's another example of, I think, of how karma and rebirth kind of work out together.
There's a saying from the Talmud, the Jewish Talmud, that I think is interesting. It teaches that before an unborn soul, its fate is shown to it before it comes into birth. It sees the fate which awaits it. And the only thing that cannot be determined by that soul in terms of its future life is whether the person will be good or bad. That's up to the individual. Mm-hmm. That's always under our free will. That's always within our determination, whether we will be good or bad in our character. Regardless of what fate lies ahead of us, we have that within our control.
Well, for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. Our topic for today is Karma, Part 2. And if you'd like to order books that explore the theme of karma a little further, of course, with karma is a subject that Alice Bailey has written about in just nearly every one of the 24 volumes of books. But if you want to take a quick look at it, get a little bit more insight into what karma is all about, there are two books in particular. Ponder on This, you might want to take a look at that. And another book by Alice Bailey is Serving Humanity. So once again, the two books that you can order in order to explore this topic a little further on your own is Ponder on This and Serving Humanity. And to order those books, you're welcome to call us on our toll-free number, 1-866-695-8247. Once again, it's 1-866-695-8247. An easy way to remember it is 1-866, think of New York Lucis, 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. Our website, www.lucistrust.org. Our email, newyork@lucistrust.org. And to order our books, cassette tapes of the radio shows, cassette tapes of some of our books, or if you'd like to order a free booklet containing the Great Invocation or a schedule of our meditation meetings, or for more information on our organization, you can certainly order a general package of information that tells you who we are, and you'll discover that we're not a religion. We strongly encourage you to hold on to your religion because that makes us richer when you share your beliefs with us. But in general, we're an organization that we explore life together. We have meetings and we talk about the writings of Alice Bailey, the meaning of life, and where we've been and where we're going, where all of humanity is heading for, and how we can improve upon our condition on this earth. But once again, give us a call if you want to order our books at 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. And remember also that the work of the Lucis Trust, including this program, is funded entirely by voluntary donations, so we welcome your donations as a means of keeping us on the air. You know, people very often speak about a karmic tie. What do they mean by karmic ties? I think to some extent you've touched upon that already, but more in depth, what do they mean by karmic ties?
Well, I think they are trying to define or describe a link that they feel they have, a very deep spiritual link with another person. Probably we are not as accurate as we should be in recognizing the people, the souls, who are really our karmic ties. But the people with whom we have a very deep relationship, not necessarily a happy one, but one which is deep and instructive, you could say, one which teaches us a great deal.
Even though it's negative.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes we learn a great deal from relationships that are very painful. Those might be karmic ties. And then there's the karma of love, because love never ends. From lifetime to lifetime, it continues. Why would love end just because someone dies? That carries over, and those are karmic ties that bring us back into relationship with people that we've loved deeply in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there is the idea of the soulmate, but I...
That's certainly abused and misused.
Yeah, today. I'm not sure that there was always really a karmic tie there in soulmates, but that's more wishful thinking, perhaps.
Yeah.
But there is a real karmic tie in certain people that we work with, for example. You're born into a certain family, and you might think, and perhaps you do have a karmic tie with this family members, the parents and the siblings. But also, I think we have to look a little beyond that, because So oftentimes the people we end up with in life and the people we feel such a great affinity to, perhaps in our work life and or in some kind of service activity, particularly service, I think, because that's where so many common types of service come together, and they have this relationship in this particular service. And just speaking from personal experience, I think I feel a kind of a karmic tie with the people I work with and that sort of thing. But this was not what my path set out, what my soul's, maybe what I set out to do in the beginning of my life had nothing to do with what I'm doing now. So it's kind of, I feel more at home and at ease and at balance. It gets back to this idea of balance and harmony. And if you feel at balance and harmony with a certain group of people that you work with, then maybe there is a certain karmic tie there.
You know, there's, Sarah, you brought to mind a thought that I got from it's an ancient Chinese proverb. I don't know if it came from Confucius, but tell me if it relates to karma. You reminded me of that. There are no enemies out there in the world, only great teachers. Would a phrase like that, would that relate to what you were saying about karma?
Absolutely, yes. Everyone can teach us something, and sometimes the people who seem to be opposed in their approach to life, opposed to our approach, have the most to teach us. Because if we view life as energy and force in action, in movement, the people whose energy and force sets up a resistance to ours can sometimes be great teachers. Mm-hmm. We mislabel them by calling them enemies. They aren't necessarily so at all. They are sometimes our greatest teachers.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Can one eradicate? I mean, a lot of times we're not happy with our lot in life and we wish it were different, and we attribute it to karma sometimes. Can one eradicate the karma of another person?
That's a question that I really don't know how to answer. I can make a stab at it, but another person might answer it differently. The paradox or the confusing point lies in the fact that we are personally responsible as souls for the direction of our life, and nobody else can rightfully assume control over our lives. But on the other hand, there are great individuals, great beings throughout human history who I think probably have taken on karma for, if not for humanity, for a large group. For example, Abraham Lincoln, you might say, bore the national karma of the American people during the Civil War period. And he suffered personally, I think, a great deal from depression, a very deep, profound depression. His family suffered. It was a real burden that he bore. And he seemed to bear it on behalf of the national soul. Another example might be the Dalai Lama, who has this enormous responsibility for the Tibetan people. And perhaps another example would be someone like Martin Luther King, who came in to serve not only his own interests, but the interests of all the American African American people, and contributed so much to them.
Yes, there are examples like that. Also, I don't know that one can eradicate. There are those large examples of you can eradicate another person's karma. But I think what also is more important is perhaps, and I don't mean to say that those examples you gave were not important. Of course they are. But what it's showing another person how they can eradicate their own karma, I think, is also a consideration in that question. So,
it's, giving them an example that they can build upon.
Right. So,
can, if it is a law, and I think it is a law, I believe in karma, it feels right to me, and of course there are so many invisible laws that are not laws that we can see, touch, and feel, like the law of gravity. But if karma is a law, what place does mercy play?
That's another one of those questions that I don't know the answer to, but just approaching it from my intuition, it seems to me that there is a place for mercy. I don't believe that the universe is constructed in such a way that we have to pay, in the sense, for every transgression we've ever made in the past, if we can effect a transformation of our lives. I believe in the power of people to transform themselves and to put an end to the past. Otherwise, I think if we see life as in terms of an endless cycle of payback, it just makes no sense. It seems very static to me. Mm. Maybe someone else would see this differently. But I think there is mercy. It's probably the mercy of the soul's power to transform the consciousness through love, through forgiveness. These are acts of mercy that then can undo karma.
And I think, too, a lot of times we think that because so much of karma, well, it can be both positive and negative karma, but in general, like I said, the only karma that we really want to bring to an end is negative karma. But how can we and how do we bring karma to an end?
Well, one thought that occurs to me is through the power of love. Love can dissolve in its beneficence great evil. And this is not just a Christian concept, although certainly Christ taught it, but many great spiritual figures have taught it. The Buddha taught the power of love. It's said that his love was so immeasurable that it could not be exhausted by any hate or hostility, and that on the contrary, a hostile act would just bring to light further love. And he taught his disciples, however people speak concerning you, whether appropriately or inappropriately, courteously or rudely, wisely or foolishly, you must train yourselves to respond with kindness and love. And so we can all take that message and apply it in our approach to life.
This show is funded by the generous donations of our listeners, and we need and we welcome your support. And in closing, we invite you to ponder on this thought. Goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. Goodwill is love in action. It is the energy that draws us together in right relationship. There is a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It's a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. Let's listen for a moment to these powerful words.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.